I'm Stephanie Whittier Eliason with the U.S. Administration on Aging. I am a social worker. I have nothing to do with public health, except we decided that we have work on incidence and prevalence in the field of elder abuse, trying to figure out what is the scope and the magnitude. We have people like Dan and others who are trying to help professionals identify abuse so that we can make a report and intervene appropriately. But the question still remained, how do we prevent it? How do we stop the issue from happening? And Pam's presentation touched on that. If we can figure out a theory that is accurate, then that will definitely help inform our efforts. So I fit into this rubric of a presentation and trying to talk about what have we done at the Administration on Aging through our National Center on Elder Abuse Program to prevent elder abuse. Oh, great. I have this on a 1 minute timer to make sure I keep on track. So I didn't put a lot on the agenda because it's sort of an amorphous presentation today. What I want to do is talk about how public health entered the area of social services for us in terms of health communication. And it was really Pam that helped me understand, and also a colleague, Jeff Hall at CDC, who some of you might be familiar with the Center for Injury and Violence Prevention, who helped me understand that what we were talking about was public health, and maybe I should get a public health degree, I don't know, with my social work degree. But I'm going to talk about three efforts we've done at the center in terms of health communication. I really want to talk a lot about the lessons learned from the research we've done, the meta-analysis we've done, and compared that to what's actually happening in the area of elder abuse, and specifically the insights that we have gained, and where this is taking us as an agency, and hopefully as a field as well. Oops. So we have basically a three-prong approach in terms of prevention and health communication. We have a web-based information clearinghouse on elder maltreatment that we say is for the public and professionals, and it's been around for about 20 years. Provides information on what abuse is, on identifying abuse. We have a collection of programs that are considered to be promising programs in the area of intervention. Not actually in prevention, though, do we, Pam? I don't think so. So only intervention and response. Collection of state laws, a research database of any research remotely related to elder abuse, even if it's not in the elder abuse field, where we could learn something from. Listserv for professionals. You know, none of this really sounds like it's geared towards the public, but we say our purpose is public information, so that it's already started, you know, in the beginning, getting our brains working about how well are we communicating. We have developed targeted training for professionals. Oh, how do you go back? Targeted training for specific groups of professionals to increase identification and response. We're targeting right now healthcare professionals, specifically nurses. This is an Elder Abuse 101 training, and the idea is that, we may not have prevented it, but what we can do is we have some gatekeepers in a way. We have some first responders, which is our healthcare professionals, emergency room nurses, the home health aide, that sort of thing. And if we can help them better identify and know what to do once they see it, that can help at least can intervene much earlier. And then we wanted to launch a national elder abuse public awareness campaign, and that's what I'm going to focus on for the majority of the presentation. See now, okay, right click or left click moves me forward, okay. Okay, so the first thing that we did is spell identify wrong. But then we wanted to identify elements of successful public health campaigns. And I'm so embarrassed because Dan said in his first class in his bachelor's in journalism that his professor said that if you get one word spelt wrong, you go down a letter grade. So I'm already failing, I think. So we wanted to identify elements of successful public health campaigns. This should be familiar for the public health field. Your message has to be clearly defined, has to have a clearly defined purpose, has to resonate with your target audience. It has to be transmitted in a method that will reach the target audience. And you must have this campaign run for enough time for it to be absorbed by your audience and hopefully to make a behavior or belief change. two examples, we found a lot, but two that for us encompassed these principles were the Odds campaign and the Buzz driving campaign. The Odds campaign was an initiative to increase early testing of autism, and what they found in the campaign early on was that they were actually scaring parents into denial. And so they retooled the message to talk about an increased awareness of prevalence. And so they talked about, oh, parents dream that their kids will be a great athlete or a Bill Gates or whatever, but your kid actually has a higher likelihood of having autism. It resulted in a 35% increase of awareness in early testing. And then the Buzz driving campaign, they found that alcohol-related accidents had gone up for a young demographic of men, and they wanted to reuse the Friends Don't Let Friends Drive Drunk campaign, and they found that it wasn't effective because this demographic said they don't drive drunk. They might drive buzzed, but they're not drunk. So they retooled it into the Buzz driving campaign, and found that 1 year later, 9 out of 10 of the targeted demographic actually described the spot as being effective in changing their behavior. So good examples of a well-identified purpose, well-placed ads, well-targeted ads, and relevant and digestible information. So then we wanted to say, okay, well, we're talking about elder abuse. Let's look at other forms of violence. What lessons could we learn from domestic violence about raising awareness and preventing domestic violence? Well, the first study, the big study that we found, was that an increased knowledge of the problem does not result in a decrease in incidence. So that sort of set us back a little bit. We've also found there's a continued, to this day, social norming of family violence as a private matter, and so there's still challenges in having it addressed. Interestingly, there's no correlation between an individual's statement of intent to intervene and their actual intervention or doing something. So again, you might have changed a belief or increased in awareness, but you haven't reached that behavior change. And that the language of victimization exacerbates victimhood both internally for the victim, but also societally. Again, it's sort of a weak person, an unable person, and in any way like that, so it's almost as if then they're undeserving to be helped. So that's something that we really wanted to be conscientious of. And the other thing is that it took women on average 2 to 3 years to leave an abusive situation. And so as Ron and others have talked about, the elder abuse kind of dynamic is very similar to the domestic violence dynamic. So we're talking about needing to do something for more than 6 months or 3 months or maybe even 18 months. So, we learned from domestic violence a little bit, we learned from public health a little bit, and then we said, well, let's look at what's going on in current elder abuse public awareness efforts. So we identified and cataloged 500, more or less, elder abuse public awareness resources, things that were targeted or tagged as public awareness, so they could have been a video, a brochure, something to raise awareness. We looked at it for audience, content, and medium. I'm going to just run through these. So in terms of audience, the campaigns were general, to a general audience, or they were to professionals, but they weren't actually to seniors or caregivers, which we found really interesting. So we're either trying to educate a professional or trying to do something, just talk to people in general. In terms of content, the message was not specific except for in a few. We have 3% talked about specific type of abuse, 15% talked about financial. WEED is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. But about half or more were just general kind of concepts about elder abuse is bad. So we're missing our targeted message here. And then in terms of medium, we had videos, brochures, booklets, posters. We had a lot of written material, fact sheets. We had some videos, but they were mostly trainings. And then the miscellaneous is going to be like PowerPoint presentations, things like this. And the campaign is someone that, or efforts that were tried to be multidimensional. And then the other were like pins, magnets, things like that. So, to recap, what we saw with current public awareness efforts was that most of the existing materials, rather than being specific in message, were general in terms of the content. Rather than being targeted to a specific group or demographic, they were designed for a general audience. Rather than being campaigns that repeated consistent messages, they were local or regional in focus, and so the message could vary from Texas to California, and they were time limited, 3 months maybe. So what we found is that we might miss an initial very important step of making this issue relevant, digestible, timely, and effective. So almost, why are you doing it? you're probably really missing the mark. But a really important question is, who's your audience? You're missing this opportunity to reach your audience, but who's your audience? That's what we want to know. Who is the audience? Who do we think can make the change that we're seeking? And actually, what change are we seeking? We want to stop abuse. Okay, well, so who does the abuse? Do you want to stop abuse, or do you want people to age better? What do you want? We've targeted professionals in the past who work with victims, but is that appropriate? Are we actually saying it's a systemic problem that is allowing abuse to happen? And if we say no, it's that people aren't upset about it enough, well, who's the people? How do you make a message relevant to some obscure, diffuse general public? So these were the questions that, after we did all of our research that was supposed to inform us, actually left us with more questions. So we decided to try and do a little market research. We interviewed professionals in the field. We also interviewed representatives from a number of national aging, civic, and philanthropic organizations. We did 8 focus groups with seniors and caregivers, but not caregivers of the seniors. We had actually about 10 people in each focus group, so we had about 80. And what we found was that everywhere people said there was a lack of awareness, even the older adults. Lack of awareness is an issue. The message should be focused on raising awareness, not on interventions, because people didn't even know that it was a problem, so why are you going to focus on doing something about it? And what was really interesting is that seniors themselves, along with everyone else, said that we ought to target younger seniors, care providers, not like professional home community-based providers, but caregivers and other family members. And seniors wanted us to use emotionally evocative images and visuals that were shocking and that clearly conveyed the message was about maltreatment. That was very interesting because we looked to our sister agency, the CDC, to talk about how do you communicate to younger seniors. And when we took our visuals into our focus groups, we focused on positive imaging, we focused on empowerment messages, we focused on all those things that we were told we needed to focus on, and we avoided sensationalism. We avoided shocking messages. And what we heard was that the message that you're conveying of a very serious subject is entirely incongruent with that image. If you're telling me that elder abuse is serious, why are you just showing me a sad senior? Why aren't you showing me bruises? Why aren't you showing me a homeless man who is a victim of financial exploitation? Or why aren't you showing me a spot about someone whose money has been stolen and they've been abused and now they're in a nursing home and they never wanted to be there? So that was really challenging for us, and we weren't really sure what to do about it. So then we moved on and also learned from our friends at the CDC that when you're communicating to younger seniors, there are a few places where they get their information. Doctors, 62%. Television, 38%. Website, 37%. And most of our elder abuse prevention materials were print materials. Well, a magazine is print, but it's an ad. It's a one-page ad. It's not a brochure. It's not a handout. You can put them in the doctor's office, but it's the doctor. So we know that we need to have doctors having conversations. And we would say doctors also are nurses and nurse practitioners, because many, that's all they can even get to the doctor. And interestingly, 65 of 78 million baby boomers are online, and baby boomers make up a third of the web users in the United States. So to us, we had a lot of conflicting information, and we weren't really sure what to do about it. And then we learn even more, and we have sort of an aha moment, that an effective public health campaign is multidimensional. It targets your individual, it targets your system, it targets your community, not as in a community programmatic response, but in terms of your media advocacy, your awareness, your outcry, your policies, your programs that are in place. And we were realizing that to effectively engage in a communications campaign, that we really needed to better integrate all of our program activities. It isn't just, they're not discrete activities with the goal of helping seniors who are victims, that we need to work at having every component linked to the idea of communicating the same information with the same purpose, which is so nuanced, it's even hard for me to talk about, but I hope that I'm sort of conveying what our aha moment was, which is instead of the silos, we really needed to have this information reinforced throughout all of our programs. We also needed to do much more market research about how do we target seniors with our messages. And we really need to enhance our website to appeal to seniors, because when we looked at it, we were like, oh my God, this is a horrible, boring, hard to navigate website, and anyone coming here isn't really going to know what to do about it or do with the information. So we've talked about creating a consumer-friendly portal, a public awareness portal for those communities and states that want to engage in social marketing so that they can have information that is consistently produced, the same message, even tools and toolkits to roll out a campaign. And we need to do a much better job at translating research and facts from the abstract into usable information for people, not just professionals, but for seniors, so that they understand when they see Ron's study about low social support, that they understand that maybe they need to start advocating for more transportation services, or, you know, being a friend to a neighbor where before they just, you know, that's his business, you know, kind of perspective. And also that we needed to really develop a social marketing campaign targeted at seniors at the individual level, but leverage our community, state, and national partners. So we're very committed to that. In training, we do want to continue to focus on improvement and identification of response, because prevention, unfortunately, isn't going to stop everything. And we want to continue to explore the use of our technology to deliver those trainings, but we want those messages to be more consistent across all of our programmatic efforts. And to ensure consistency, as I just said, of the core concepts. And then finally, to provide technical assistance to others to understand the multi-level components of effective health communications campaigns. This is really a challenge for me because, again, I'm a social worker, and I'm like, what? This is a public awareness campaign. But, you know, reading the literature, learning about it, and I realized that it's reinforcing your message at every possible juncture, and that's what we have consistently lacked as a field to do, and we need to do more of that. So we're hoping that we can sort of really function in that clearinghouse manner and provide that source of information out to everybody. And if you'd like more information, that's how you can reach me. That's where you can reach the National Center on Elder Abuse. And hopefully that was helpful. Pam, where do we go next? So I think we're open for questions.
Just a comment. I think one of the most frustrating things about working in this field is getting good, solid data on prevalence. It's so soft, and the range that, you know, you just heard about, it just seems staggering to me. But recognizing the difficulty of getting accurate information about all that's going on, you can understand.
When your group was discussing the use of the multiple hips model, have you guys looked at allostatic load at all and tried
yes,
to calculate allostatic
load? We are looking at that, but you can see we're just making them in. But a colleague of mine who does PTSD is trying to make some piece of that, and we absolutely are. And that's a great suggestion. I think it's very exciting. We will see what we come up with. It's going to take us a while to do it. Other questions?
Again, just more common, you know, the Elder Justice Act itself, you know, while it passed, needs the funding. And some things are starting.
We're talking about that, yes, and we're talking, yeah.
It's starting, but we really need to make sure that that happens.
Is there any timely available information for geriatricians and practitioners to recognize the low size of the
Yeah, there's some work. And actually, CMS has, there's a 4-hour online training that CMS sponsored, and it's on one of their sites. And I can look it up, and I know that we're kind of out of time, but if you have a minute to stay, I can pull up that particular web address. It's one of those long CMS, you know, programs. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it is, a lot of the pictures that I show are reproduced in there. It's just an introductory thing. It was designed for long-term care providers and for survey agencies to look at as an overview, but it's free. And it has some of the gross pictures in it, so sometimes providers want to be able to look at those pictures. But I can look that site up for you right now.
Yes, I think UC Irvine has done one through the Archdam Foundation.
Yeah, UC Irvine, Dr. Laura Legata, geriatrician, and her team put together several training resources for geriatricians and primary care teams on identifying elder abuse and neglect. And that's the Center of Excellence on Elder Abuse and Neglect at UC Irvine.
And that's the training that we actually, the Center on Elder Abuse, modified for nurses, which we are in the process of getting CEUs for, and it will be a web-based training that should be out there no later than
Go to www.iafn.org. They just released a training that was DOJ-OBC sponsored for nurses on elder abuse. It's
right,
pretty basic.
Yeah.
It's pretty basic. And I wrote the first draft of that a couple years back. www.ifn.org, and you'll see a link somewhere on their homepage. You'll see a link to that training for nurses, medical professionals as well. So that's another choice for you.
There's a journal that